At some point, most of us have fantasized about swapping our hectic day-to-day lives for isolated bliss on a tropical island. But while that might sound like heaven to some, survival on a deserted island is certainly no picnic, as one exceptional group of real-life castaways learned back in the 60s. And craziest of all, they were only teenagers at the time. So grab your coconuts and face-painted volleyballs as we explore the incredible true story of six boys who found themselves lost and alone on a deserted island. The true story you're about to hear is one of adventure, adaptation, and a level of resilience that you might just struggle to believe. Like a lot of good stories, this one starts with a bit of schoolboy mischief. In 1965, friends Sione, Stephen, David, Colo, Mono, and Luke were studying together at St. Andrew's College in the city of Nuku'alofa, located on the island of Tonga Tapu. The picturesque 99-square-mile island is part of the Kingdom of Tonga, a group of 169 islands found in the southern Pacific Ocean, further east from Australia. Fed up with the regimented and strict discipline of their Catholic boarding school, these rebellious young buddies, aged between 13 and 16, hatched a plan for the ultimate seafaring joyride, which, unbeknownst to them, would turn into their very own fight for survival. The plan was a daring one. They planned to commandeer a fishing boat from a grumpy local fisherman that the boys had a particular dislike for and set off towards a new life in Fiji on an epic adventure they would never forget. Well, they certainly never did forget it, but not for the reasons they initially expected. Now, Fiji was around 400 nautical miles northwest from the boys' starting point in Tonga Tapu, and it's estimated that this considerable journey would have taken them just about 2 days to complete. But inadequate supply packing contributed to their downfall. They took just 2 sacks of bananas, a few coconuts, and a small gas burner, but none of the boys thought to bring a map or compass, which is hardly a good start to the sea voyage, right? Even worse, only one out of the 6 boys had any knowledge of sailing, but they still went anyway. As evening fell on Tonga Tapu, no one noticed the group boarding the boat and leaving the harbor. Only a light breeze rippled across the calm water. These were the best sailing conditions these young seafarers could have hoped for. All seemed well as the boys began sailing away from all their problems, but little did they know that they were just about to crash into an even bigger one. Once it had gotten dark, the boys decided that they could take a little break from their ocean navigating duties and they fell asleep together under the stars. But that pleasant-sounding scenario soon turned to sheer terror. After a few hours had passed, the boys were awakened by a raging storm that had broken the 25-foot boat's rudder as well as having torn the sails to shreds. Panicked and helpless, the boys were able to survive the terrifying storm still aboard their vessel, but that was just the beginning of their fight for survival. The boys and their mangled boat drifted aimlessly in the open water for days on end, and their modest picnic of coconuts and bananas quickly ran out. Desperate, the boys tried to catch fish, to varying degrees of success, and managed to collect some rainwater in hollowed-out coconut shells, sharing it equally between them, with each taking 1 sip in the morning and another at night. With their boat rapidly falling apart, they knew it was only a matter of time before their only respite from the big open blue sank below the depths. However, on the 8th day adrift, the boys spotted a miracle in the distance. They finally saw dry land. Weak from hunger and dehydration, the boys swam their way to shore using broken boat parts to stay afloat, with hopes that salvation was finally theirs. But horror and dismay soon began setting in equal measures. As they realized there was no sign of life on the island, they were the only living souls there. So where exactly were they anyhow? Well, unbeknownst to the boys at the time, they had actually traveled 100 nautical miles southwest of where they had set off from in Tonga Tapu and had found themselves on the deserted island of Ata. Immediately upon arrival, the boys went into survival mode. Desperate for shelter from the elements, they use their bare hands to dig into the crumbling sandstone sea cliff to make a cave, and as photographs of later recreations by the boys revealed, they resorted to surviving on raw fish, seabirds, and the liquid from their raw eggs. As days passed, their desperation for rescue grew, but with the area seeing very little traffic from either sea or sky, it soon became apparent that the classic techniques of leaving messages in the sand in hope of being spotted wouldn't be enough. The boys realized they'd have to look out for themselves if they ever wanted to leave and set about building a raft. They cut down tall trees, gathered and reinforced the branches, and after days and weeks of hard work, their wooden vessel was finally ready. Sadly, though, it seemed that luck wasn't on the boys' side just yet, as once they'd got the raft on the water, the rough currents quickly dashed all hopes of escape, and a huge wave destroyed the makeshift vessel. Cast down and out of ideas on how to flee the island, the boys concluded that it was time to try and make the place their home. Only half a mile squared with steep cliffs and rocky beaches, while the island of Ata was isolated and devoid of other humans, there was no denying it was beautiful and, had the circumstances been different, might have made the perfect paradise getaway. However, considering the only mammal native to Ata was the Polynesian rat, the constant desire for the easy food and company of civilization kept things from becoming all that cheerful. But while Ata was desolate when it came to people and resources, it hadn't always been. Unbeknownst to the boys, the island had once been populated by humans but was abandoned more than 100 years prior and came with a rather unhappy history attached to it. Back in 1863, there were around 350 people documented to be living on Ata in a village called Kolomale, but tragedy was set to strike. After an unsuccessful whaling expedition that took place around Fiji, Australian Captain Thomas James McGrath decided to swap the whaling trade for slaving and rocked up to Ata uninvited in June of that year. After inviting the islanders on board his vessel, the Grecian, under the guise of trading negotiations, the doors and rooms were locked and the ship sailed away, having deceptively captured 144 of the islanders as slaves, never to return. The whaler-turned-slaver went on to kidnap a further 30 people from a second Tongan island, Niuafo'u, while the islanders of Uiha, also in Tonga, were able to ambush the slavers, driving them away. After finding out about these kidnapping tactics known as blackbirding, King George Tupou of Tonga ordered the immediate evacuation of the rest of the citizens on Ata in case the slavers returned. Since then, the island has remained desolate, to this very day in fact, having never been repopulated due to how dangerous the rocky underwater terrain and a lack of harbor makes approaching by ship. Unaware of this grim history, you can imagine the joy and presumably bafflement felt by the Tongan castaways when they stumbled upon the remnants of Kolomale village a century after its abandonment. It was only after around 3 months marooned that the boys came across the ruins while exploring the island and were perplexed but relieved to find some things that could be useful to them. Amid the rubble, the teens were able to find supplies to help them build a life on the island, a machete, some cultivated and still growing taro, which is a starchy root plant, and a small flock of chickens descended from the ones left behind by previous residents. From then on, the boys began to develop a more organized approach to their new life, steadily exploring more of the island, before finally settling on a tree-covered area where they set up camp. Using any natural materials they could get their hands on, the teens pulled together to construct their very own thatched roof hut and outdoor kitchen area and began settling into their new surroundings. They had no matches to make fire, but they desired so strongly for a hot meal that they set about finding another way. Thankfully, one of the boys, Stephen, had some knowledge of the old ways of making a flame using sticks. After days of tireless work and countless failures, they finally made a fire that was so precious to them, they did not leave it unattended for their entire time on the island. As time passed, the boys also fine-tuned their methods of water collection. Using wooden stakes and rough knives found at the ruins of the old settlement, the boys spent 4 days digging deep into a tree trunk, and slowly but surely, drip by drip, they had water. This method of intercepting water as it travels through a tree's trunk is an ancient survival tactic and proved invaluable to the ingenious teens. As the months passed, the boys continued to survive despite some major setbacks. One day, one of the boys, Stephen, slipped and fell off a cliff, breaking his leg from the fall. While you might think that kids in this situation would have no idea what to do and that chaos would quickly descend, these boys continued to subvert any prejudices people tend to have about the youth. The friends were able to scale the cliff to rescue their friend and, once in safety, set his wound in a DIY splint using sticks and leaves they gathered nearby. Stephen was out of action for some weeks to come, but miraculously, his leg healed perfectly. While the boys clearly had the physical fitness needed to survive on a deserted island, it was their knack for survival of the friendliest that really drove them to success.
The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel very meaningful and personal. They focus on high-quality, unique items that are often handmade or created by independent artists, so everything feels extra thoughtful. I found this custom star map that shows the night sky from any date and immediately thought, yep, that's the one. It's beautifully designed, completely customizable, and perfect for my girlfriend who's obsessed with stargazing. Uncommon Goods truly has something for everyone, from parents and teens to foodies, sports fans, book lovers, and gardeners. Plus, they donate $1 to a nonprofit of your choice with every purchase, already giving back over $3.1 million. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/beamazed. That's uncommongoods.com/beamazed for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
As time went on, the boys ironically found themselves right back where they started at school. They were clearly very bored and with nothing to do. To counteract mind-numbing boredom, these teens set about building their very own version of a paradise holiday park. To complete their little settlement, the boys constructed their own badminton court and even their own gym, including a DIY bench press to keep them occupied. The six boys had also split up into teams of two for labor, drawing up an organized rota for garden, kitchen, and guard duty, the latter of which mostly consisted of looking out for passing ships. With all this work, it would be easy for a group of unattended teenagers to argue and bicker amongst themselves all day long, but these boys even had a plan for that too. If anyone started to argue, the group had a strict timeout policy where they would spend a few hours alone to cool off. I think some of the world's politicians could learn quite a bit from these boys' skills in diplomacy. According to the boys, arguments weren't too frequent, and they kept their spirits up by singing and praying. One of the boys, Kolo, even managed to make a guitar using a piece of driftwood, half a coconut, and six steel wires salvaged from the wrecked boat, which is a different kind of musical genius than the type you usually hear about. During their time on Atta Island, the boys were constantly making smoke signals in hopes of attracting passing ships, of which a total of four failed to sight the boys. But little did they know that their luck was eventually set to change. On September 11, 1966, aboard his fishing boat called Just David, Australian seafarer Peter Warner was sailing by Atta Island when he noticed some strange patches of burned grass and called for his crew to investigate. These patches were particularly peculiar since spontaneous forest fires are pretty rare in Tonga's more humid corner of the world. More than that, Peter was aware that the island was uninhabited, so felt sure that there must be something strange afoot. As the boat drifted closer to the island, the crew began to hear something that unbelievably sounded like a human voice. Soon after, Peter spied something he really couldn't believe through his binoculars. A boy suddenly jumping out from the forest, wildly waving his arms about before jumping into the sea and swimming towards the boat. To Peter's amazement, five other boys suddenly appeared who quickly caught up with their friend. They were undressed, with overgrown hair and absolutely caked in dirt. At first, Peter got a little worried as he'd heard of islands like these being used by natives as prisons for the worst kinds of criminals. With this possibility in his mind, he told the crew to get ready in case things turned nasty. Now they were up close, Peter could see just how disheveled they appeared, and he was truly shocked when the boy suddenly said, in perfect English, "My name is Stephen. There are six of us, and we reckon we've been here 15 months. After hesitantly listening to their pretty implausible-sounding story, Peter was still suspicious. He wrote down the names of all six and set about finding out exactly who these boys really were. Unlike the castaways, Peter was an experienced seafarer and had all the necessary equipment to contact those back on dry land. Using his boat's radio, he called the nearby island of Nuku'alofa and asked the operator to check the boys' names with St. Andrew's College on Tongatapu. While they awaited the outcome of their call, the boat's cook prepared a meal for the boys, which they rapidly consumed and just as promptly vomited up, as their bodies weren't used to prepared and processed food after so long. After 20 minutes of waiting in suspense, a tearful radio operator informed Peter that these were in fact the six boys who had been missing for over a year. The boys were awestruck to learn that their families had even held funerals for them after attempting to search for them on other nearby islands, finally resigning themselves to the fact that their boys were never coming home. Shocked but overjoyed, Peter made haste to get the boys safely back to the mainland. Naturally, you'd expect the teenagers to be welcomed home with open arms from their community, especially after the ordeal they'd been through, but they didn't quite get the welcome home party they'd anticipated. When Peter brought the boys back to the mainland, they were met by the police, who promptly arrested the boys for stealing the boat that had started their misadventure 15 months earlier. According to this grumpy old man, a near-death experience just wasn't enough punishment for these tearaways, and he was set on vengeance for his long-lost fishing boat. The boys were thrown in jail and may well have been praying they were back on Ada Island with more space and probably better food. Fortunately, Peter had a plan to help the boys, as it had occurred to him that the story of the Tongan teens and their shipwreck was perfect for the silver screen. After selling the rights to the boys' story on their behalf to an Australian TV channel, Peter was able to pay off the owner of the wrecked boat to the tune of 150 Tongan pounds, which is the equivalent of around $4,000 today. Thanks to Peter's stroke of genius, not only did he get the boys off the hook with the law, but his idea also meant that their experience was documented on film. Unlike most on-screen recreations of true stories, the boys actually played themselves in a documentary made about their ordeal, acting out exactly what they did to survive the island, which explains the existence of some pictures available online. Seeing as the island was their home for 15 months, their makeshift settlement was still very much intact, and the boys were easily able to guide the film crew around, showing exactly what they did to survive from start to finish. While the astounding story of the Tongan castaways has become largely obscure, it's often been likened to a popular novel studied in schools across the world, The Lord of the Flies. For those of you who don't know, The Lord of the Flies is a novel written by William Golding in 1954 and tells the terrifying tale of a group of young schoolboys who find themselves marooned on a deserted island. They develop rules and a system of organization, but without any adult supervision, the children eventually become violent, brutal, and unbelievably cruel in a deadly struggle for power. So why is it that these Tongan teenagers were able to live peacefully together for 15 months without things getting too wild? Well, their culture may have something to do with it. In many Western countries like the UK, where the Lord of the Flies kids came from, children are raised in a culture that values individualism and the accumulation of personal wealth. Tongan society, meanwhile, is guided by four core values, all of which combine to ensure a thriving community. These four core values are Fefaka Apa Apa Aki, meaning mutual respect, Lota Tu, humility and generosity, Tauhiva Ha, loyalty and commitment, and Feve Tokai Aki, sharing and cooperation, the sharing part of the last of which might be what guided these boys to borrow that grumpy old fisherman's boat in the first place. But seriously, family is central to Tongan life, and the six Tongan castaways' survival was most definitely rooted in the strength of the community over the individual, which is quite different compared with the fictional boys in Golding's novel. But equally, maybe kids are just better people than William Golding and many other people like to assume. Either way, after the rescue, Peter remained in touch with the boys and even gave them jobs on board one of his lobster boats. Despite this story's happy ending, it was by no means the end of Peter and the Tongan castaways' adventures. In 1974, a 38-foot yacht was declared missing in the giant expanse of the Tasman Sea after leaving Auckland almost 2 months earlier bound for Sydney. On board had been a Welsh captain, an Australian teacher, a New Zealand nurse, and an Australian student. Sounds like the perfect roster for a castaway edition of Clue, right? These folks had wound up as castaways when their yacht was wrecked by a coral reef 300 miles east of Australia by the name of Middleton Reef, which they were forced to hole up on. Luckily, they were a little better prepared for disaster than our teen tearaways and survived on tinned food packed for their journey. But as supplies dwindled, the situation became a dire one, and they soon found themselves struggling for survival on the reef, which, unlike Ada Island, was entirely devoid of any shelter or real means of sustenance. As it happened, our old friend Peter was sailing another of his boats, aptly named Ada, when one of his crew spotted the group as they signaled from the reef using a mirror to create flashes of sunlight. Most astoundingly of all, the crewman who sighted the distress flashes was none other than Sione Filipe Totau, the eldest of the six Tongan castaways, who was now a deckhand on Peter's ship. Talk about paying it forward. Charles Darwin taught us that survival is all about being the fittest and the strongest, but the story of the Tongan castaways seems to prove that working together in trying times can really be the difference between life and death. So maybe next time you, or someone else, considers judging young people as being selfish, reckless, and irresponsible, maybe you'll think back to this incredible story and reconsider. Then again, perhaps the outcome wouldn't have been quite so great had the Tongan castaways been addicted to TikTok. What would you do if you found yourself marooned on a deserted island? That's something I often think to myself. I'd probably cry for help and drown in my own tears. Thanks for listening.